Morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
My name is MacArthur Drake. I represent the defendant below, Mr. Willie Wallace, in this appeal. Your Honor, this appeal is based on basically three issues, contentions, general contentions. One is that this is a conviction of a felon in possession of a firearm. And the defendant's conviction prior to this indictment was in the Illinois State Court. following the entry of the guilty plea, the defendant obtained a ruling from
counsel,
the...
Counsel,
yeah.
This was, I take it, an unconditional guilty plea?
It was an unconditional guilty plea. In one way, it was not.
No reservation of any right to appeal a particular issue.
There was no reservation, Your Honor, but that's because there was no opportunity to obtain any sort of reservation.
If you wanted to raise this issue on appeal, you needed to enter a conditional guilty plea. Because all other issues are waived by guilty plea.
Your Honor, the defendant's position is that the jurisdictional issue.
There's no jurisdictional issue in this case. We have held that every federal indictment comes within the jurisdiction of the district court under 18 U.S.C. 3231. The line of arguments saying that there's something wrong with this indictment or that something wrong with this statute does not call into question the jurisdiction of district courts. We've held that repeatedly. So there's no jurisdictional issue in this case.
Your Honor, we understand the court's statement in that regard. However, the jurisdiction over this particular case, we would contend, could only be predicated on a prior felony.
The jurisdiction over this case is predicated on 18 U.S.C. 3231. Which authorizes the prosecution of offenses against the United States. The argument that your client did not commit an offense against the United States does not concern the jurisdiction of the district court. It's simply a defense to the charge. We have quite a few cases holding that. Now, you could have asked that we overrule all of those cases, but in fact, your briefs don't do that.
That's true, Your Honor. That's because it's the defendant's position that the district court would not have the power and authority to hear this kind of case, even if there were an indictment, if there were no underlying facts upon which the indictment could be based. We think that otherwise the court would have jurisdiction over a defendant who had never committed any offense, had never been charged with any of that.
That's correct. The court would have jurisdiction. The claim that no prior offense existed would be a ground on which your client must be acquitted. And the acquittal would be a judgment entered by a court with jurisdiction. If the court had no jurisdiction, it couldn't enter an acquittal either.
Well, we didn't ask for an acquittal, Judge. We believe that
I won't pursue it anymore, but you're basically asking us to ignore quite a lot of our own decisions that you don't cite, that you don't discuss, that you don't ask us to overrule. And as I say, if you want us to overrule our cases, that's fine. We're happy to entertain arguments along those lines. But one cannot simply ignore them.
Your Honor, if the court's position is one of a distinction between jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction, and jurisdiction over a particular case, we will certainly acknowledge that distinction. And all we're asking for in this case, Your Honor, that we believe has not been waived for several reasons, is that the court take into consideration what the state of Illinois' decision was with regard to the predicate felony conviction of defendant Willie Wallace. And that is the court's determination that the decision was convicting Wallace was unconstitutional and was void ab initio, and they entered that order not in a collateral attack is before the district court here, but in the court in which the alleged conviction had taken place. Your Honor, with regard to the voluntariness of the entry of the plea as an unconditional plea, we would contend that there wasn't a voluntary entry without reservation that was voluntary to the defendant. We believe the record shows that the defendant pled guilty, and he pled guilty on the day of trial. However, the record, we believe, abundantly shows that there was a plea agreement that was in the making. This wasn't, as some of the cases cited by the defendant, by the U.S. attorney indicates, this wasn't something that was an afterthought by the defendant after he got to court on the day of trial. The reason he was in court on the day of trial without the benefit of the plea that had been contemplated.
Any significance to this day of trial business? Normally we think of the discount for acceptance of responsibility as available to somebody who accepts responsibility. But you're standing here, even now, saying that your client does not accept responsibility and he wants to go scot-free. It's pretty hard to claim a discount for acceptance of responsibility when you're making the argument that he didn't commit any federal crime at all and his punishment should be zero.
Your Honor, the defendant acknowledged in his own words at the trial that he had possession of the handgun in the Hammond case. That's the case that took place April 10, 1999. The defendant has vehemently denied possession of the alleged assault rifle on May 10, 1999 in Chicago. And that case was not even the subject of a trial in city court, in municipal court. Yet it has resulted in the defendant having his sentence enhanced tremendously by the federal district court. The defendant's position is, Your Honor, that when that plea was entered, it was entered under circumstances in which the defendant didn't really have an opportunity to enter a plea, which had been negotiated and which was in the process of being revised. The urgency of him entering that plea, he had no way of knowing that prior to the time of the trial, since the trial was set, I guess, within some 3 business days of the day the court set the trial. Even though I think as the record reflects and is acknowledged by the government's brief, there were plea agreement terms and conditions that had been agreed to, but there was some clerical error that was in the process of being corrected, and that in fact was corrected, but the trial setting precluded, because it was within 5 days of the day of the order setting the trial, precluded entering that plea. So the defendant was left to come to court on the day ordered to come to court and to do whatever was available on that day. But the fact is, we believe this court has the authority to overrule the decision with regard to the state court felony. And we set out the position in the brief, we believe, that will allow the court to do that. Alternatively, and we're constrained to argue an alternative here, that the motion to suppress had arguments, the substance of which wasn't contested by the U.S. attorney, but I guess it rested directly on the waiver argument that the court has just mentioned. The additional thing for the court, we believe, to consider is whether or not the sentencing itself was a proper application of the guidelines. We contend that it was not. We contend that the defendant was given a sentence that included alleged relevant conduct, when in fact that relevant conduct never met any standard, the preponderance of the evidence standard, and certainly not the standard of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. We believe Apprendi requires that the defendant not be sentenced unless the due process requirements are met with regard to the underlying basis for the sentence. I think the only thing before the court on which the defendant could be sentenced was the count one possession of the handgun in Hammond, April 9th, 1999. And we would like to reserve any time left for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Drake. Mr. Kirsch?
Time is up. May it please the court. I intend to briefly address three issues raised by Mr. Drake in his argument. First, the motion to dismiss. Second, the motion to suppress. And finally, the district court's application of the sentencing guidelines. As to the motion to dismiss, we request that the district court's decision be affirmed. Lewis v. United States sets forth a bright-line rule that a convicted felon cannot possess a firearm before his conviction is expunged or voided or cleared up in some manner. This court, United States v. Lee, and in United States v. Lloyd, applied that principle. In this case, Mr. Wallace was first convicted in the Illinois trial court of a felony conviction. He then possessed firearms in violation of Section 922. He then was indicted by the grand jury in federal court. The Illinois Supreme Court then decided People v. Cervantes. Finally, after Mr. Wallace pled guilty.
Given the guilty plea, what difference does any of this make?
Pardon?
Given the guilty plea, how could we consider any of this?
I agree, Your Honor. However, given the court's decision in United States v. Martin, which is not cited in our brief, I deem it appropriate.
Actually, in your brief at page 8.
It's cited in page 8, but it's not cited for the proposition upon which I believe that you're referring, that he, by unconditionally pleading guilty, waived this particular argument on appeal. But given the court's holding in cases subsequent to Martin, I do agree with Your Honor's suggestion. Second is to Mr. Wallace's motion to suppress. Mr. Wallace, by unconditionally pleading guilty, clearly waived his motion to suppress issue. There's no evidence in the record whatsoever that Mr. Wallace reserved that right to appeal, which is required under Rule 11. Finally, as to Mr. Wallace's argument regarding the application of the sentencing guidelines, the district court properly denied Mr. Wallace a two-level or three-level reduction in acceptance of responsibility. Mr. Wallace continues to deny relevant conduct. Also, Mr. Wallace's guilty plea was not timely. As to the relevant conduct argument raised by Mr. Wallace, clearly the court did not err here. The standard, as I'm sure you're aware, is clearly erroneous. Under United States v. Ofke and United States v. Santoro, the behavior in East Chicago was relevant to the conduct in Hammond. And finally, Mr. Wallace's Apprendi issue is meritless. Mr. Wallace was not sentenced beyond the statutory maximum, therefore Apprendi does not apply. Unless the court has any questions, nothing further. Simply request that the district judge's opinion be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Kirsch. Mr. Drake, your time had expired, but if you wish a minute for any rebuttal, you may have it.
Yes, just briefly, Your Honor. Thank you. We believe that Apprendi would still apply. The relevant conduct is sort of a bootstrap argument, because it assumes that the court applied the right standards when it determined that count two was relevant conduct. We believe the court did not. And we basically set out now brief why it's not.
Thank you, Mr. Drake. Thank you, Mr. Kirsch. The case is taken under advisement.